McLean spelled it out for Tessa, in case she still did not understand. "This fella's a dyed-in-the-wall, true dark red, trad communist, who wants the old order back at any cost. I suspect it's because he likes being part of the ruling classes, likes the kind of order it brings, doesn't care for all these jumped-up men and women making their fortunes. And he's clever enough to use the mafia and their money. In the end, it'll be them going to the wall, but he doesn't care how or whom he uses. The man's as criminal as the mafia bosses, and more ruthless." As he talked, Jimmy had a clear picture of the interpreter he'd used with Chermiette, a small academic whose terror showed in his eyes and hands. Jimmy again smelled the scent and saw the room crowded with the four of them: Chermiette, the interpreter, Jimmy McLean, and his minder, who had helped pull the Chechen from the hotel and whisk him down the Edgware Road for the meeting. The room was gloomy, decorated in purple, with clashing cheap pictures on the walls, and a crucifix out of place above the headboard. In his ears, Jimmy could hear the rhythmic thud of the bed, while the man who was paying to have his president assassinated boffed the whore for the unseen cameras. "We took movies for the insurance," Jimmy told Tessa. "It's a shame, but we need people like this now." He gave a single bark of a laugh. "The one person Chermiette seems to fear is his wife and her friends. He cheats on her with almost excessive old middle-class care."
"What about these provisos? You said there were some serious provisos."
"There are. They have to be killed with a gun, the Prez and his spicy girl. I don't suppose that'd be a problem. Preferably a bullet to the back of the head, execution style. But the main thing is that they want it done when they're in London for the talks with the Americans and the Brits. That's in 10 days. A summit, hosted by the British PM with the American president and senior advisers, had been scheduled 2 months before. "Lucky we pushed when we did. There's obviously a time limit on this, though I suppose it'll make things easier if it's on home ground. They obviously wanted to send a message to everyone."
"And Alchemist gets most favoured assassination status if he pulls it off?"
She walked 2 paces, her strides matching those of McLean.
"But why do it at all, Jimmy? It can't turn back the clocks."
Well, they think it can. They're convinced that Lenin'll come waltzing out of the mausoleum, that Stalin'll thrust aside the stone in the wall where they've got him tucked away. He used the word restoration several times. You'd think they had a direct line to Uncle Joe, not to mention Berrier and the other hardliners. This fella's harder than steel.
Jesus!
They think he's on their side as well. He actually spoke of Christianity as being the first true communism.
I always thought it was the opiate of the masses.
That's football now. This is new communism with a vengeance. Could be that we're in for the civil war everyone said would come after Glasnost. Pity nobody spotted Chermiette and his chums pulling the strings.
I'd better get myself off to see the man, then.
She automatically glanced at her wristwatch. On your way tonight? The usual flight to Bern? She did not confirm it, but Tessa already had her ticket. She did the trip regularly, seeing Alchemist at his lakeside retreat. As they walked back to the car, heads down into the wind, a motorcyclist, a robot figure, black leather and helmet, came slowly along the road, stopping and calling out to them as though asking directions. Jimmy hurried over to the idling bike.
"And?"
"There was someone, a woman. We thought she was maybe interested, but she was going to the Shelburne. A date. This fella came in and they wrapped themselves around each other. It's some affair, and she just happened to come out of the Gresham after the lady, taking the same route." "We know who she is."
"A nobody from across the water, Coventry.
A Mrs. Ruth Nightingale. They knew her at the Gresham because she's over every month. Has something to do with a bank, they say." So Jimmy McLean and Tessa Murray went away happy and with few worries, but they always travelled carefully and with constant glances over their shoulders. They really should have been more concerned. In the midst of the complex lengths to which they went to protect themselves, they'd hit one small, unseen bump. McLean felt satisfied that his team, who were good people, 4 of them former Garda detectives, would not put a foot wrong. He had been concerned about this particular job from the moment he'd watched his boys and girls part Chermiette from his minders
and slipped the word into his ear. He took it for granted that his folk in Dublin had checked and double-checked, that the ex-Garda boys had used their contacts in London to tag down this Mrs. Ruth Nightingale and pin her to the board like a butterfly. But they had not. Luck had latched on to Bex Oleska. Her name was indeed down as Mrs. Ruth Nightingale, and she'd given an address in Coventry. This identity had hurriedly been stuck on her in Belfast before she flew out from Aldergrove back to Heathrow. The ladies and gentlemen of OS-13 were painstaking, and on this occasion just that tiny bit more careful than Maclean's people. A Mrs. R. Nightingale indeed existed. She also stayed in Dublin at the Gresham about once a month, and she was connected with banking. OS-13 had made sure that Mrs. Nightingale of Coventry was not in Dublin. So, when the former detective identified himself, illegally, as a Garda officer, and asked the duty manager if he could see the registration cards of people who had booked into the Gresham in the past 24 hours, he had discovered Tessa Murray and Ruth Nightingale were the only ones. The duty manager, when asked, said yes, of course she knew Mrs. Nightingale, she was a regular. This was also true. Alas, the manager had not been on duty during the previous evening, so she had not set eyes on Mrs. Nightingale. If she had, she would have given a little squeak and said, "Oh no, that lady's not the Mrs. Nightingale I know." When Bex walked out from Grafton Street into Stephen's Green and found that her bird had flown, she did not even pause. Bex was 99.9% sure that Tessa Murray was in the old Rover pulling away into the stream of traffic. Bex was also 99.8% certain that she had someone on her tail. She had seen nobody, identified nobody, but she was, like so many women, blessed with an intuition passed to her through her father's X chromosome, and finally honed in the service of her country. If she were a betting woman, she would have put money on there being someone following her, and she simply prayed that her other sense was accurate, that this was a little security service operation. As things were, she did not falter, but kept walking steadily toward the Shelbourne Hotel, and once there she marched in, sat herself down, ordered coffee, and gave a good imitation of a young woman whose date had not turned up. She tapped her foot, drummed her fingers, and took constant glances at her watch. At last she was rewarded. A familiar face appeared, a member of the security service named Dicky Winters, who was dressed as a man about Dublin, wearing a British warm over a checked suit, a lime-green shirt with a yellow silk tie, both from Charles Tyrwhitt, and a smile that said, "I am a lecherous and roving dog." That he was well known to Bex was not an accident. That she greeted him as the man of her dreams was, again, her intuition, but it did the trick, and everyone went home satisfied. Back at the Gresham, Bex took a call just after 3 p.m. "She's booked out on a flight to Bern tonight. Bern via Brussels," the dark brown voice told her. "Wonder where she's really off to." "We think you should find out, so we've whistled up a seat on the same plane. I'll be over with the tickets."
"Will I have company?"
"Someone will be loitering along with intent."
"Oh, good."
She grinned at the telephone as she replaced the receiver, and then tried to call her brand new husband. Charlie was not at home, so she rightly figured that he was on his way to Scotland. Of course, she would have still liked to know why.